Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Into the 11 o'clock hour on this Wednesday. Thanks for hanging out with us. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Andy Reid joined Fesco in the morning earlier today, and we'll get his thoughts on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Also, just preseason, not having it. What does that mean? We've heard a lot about the model for preseason. Like, oh, it's going to be very similar to college. Just how similar is that? You'll hear from Andy Reid coming up in just a little bit. It's time, though, for our weekly conversation with Danny Welniak, sports director at KCTV5, normally on Tuesdays. But anyway, Frank Clark is talking, Danny. We do have to move some things around. Frank Clark is also one of the most enjoyable Chiefs to listen to. You do, like, he pumps you up, doesn't he?
He does. He makes you want to run through a wall, and I understand completely why that defense got so good so quickly last year. It was just because of the things that he says. Like, he and Tyrann Mathieu are like the perfect yin and yang for that defense because of how they just approach people and talk to people. You've got Frank Clark, who's like this crazy, like, mad dog mentality, who's just like can smell blood in the water, to quote him. And then Tyrann Mathieu is like the very down to earth, like inspirational, like we're going to be crazy, but we're going to do it with intelligence. So between the two of them, man, they could make anybody run through a wall.
This is a really weird year, Danny. We've seen multiple people talk about it, obviously, and what this season's going to look like. I'm kind of curious on your opinion of what you think the product itself will look like, especially the first few seasons, not really knowing what any kind of camp is going to be, you know, compared to normal years.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be super strange because I've talked to a lot of different people, as you guys have too, just with kind of how the safety protocols are going, what's kind of in place around that Chiefs, not only the training complex, but also at Arrowhead. So it's very different than anything that they've done before. And obviously, without a preseason, I think that makes it really tough for like the rookies and the guys who are fighting for jobs, any undrafted free agents or just free agents in general. Kelechi Osemele yesterday was very positive in the fact that he felt like he could just come in and slip right into this offensive line and not have many issues. But Reed's told us before that the offensive line is like the toughest position to not have a preseason and not be able to get that chemistry down. So he feels like they're going to be the ones most affected. But Semele's pretty positive about that, which in turn I think makes a lot of us positive that this team is kind of going to be like that overall, where it's kind of a plug and play. If you have any new faces or new players, that they'll just be able to fit in because they have such good veteran leadership. From the game standpoint, I don't know what this is going to look like. I know that Mark Davis came out yesterday, maybe it was the day before, and talked about how they're not going to have any fans in Vegas this year. They don't want to deal with that and having to pick fans. And each stadium is going to look different, I think, because no one really knows how to approach it. So I just think the season itself is going to be very, very strange. And whether we actually get through a whole season or not, the NFL's pretty positive. Reed's pretty positive, which leads me to be positive, but I just don't know.
One thing we heard too, Danny, from Tyrann Mathieu probably a week ago, and I heard it yesterday from Charvarius Ward, and it's this idea like they're disrespected on the defense, and that he's like, I'm going to go out there, and Charvarius said, you know, and earn my respect this year. Do you think, just truly one of those where everybody's trying to find a way to motivate themselves? We see this across sports all the time. Or do you feel like this Chiefs defense, because of the success of the offense,
that they don't get enough respect?
I think that a lot of these guys put a chip on their shoulder because that's what makes them successful. And so they'll find things to make it personal. I mean, even something as simple as Patrick Mahomes is at the top and he just signed a multi-million dollar contract, $500 million contract. And he tweets out that he's taking notes about the NFL top 100. So you're like, that shouldn't bother you. You have everything in front of you and you've earned your respect. So I just think that a lot of the guys, Patrick Mahomes, all the way to Charvarius Ward, they just find things to motivate themselves. And last year, I think the defense earned a lot of respect as they got into the postseason because, I mean, they didn't have it at the beginning of last year. And so all of that made sense because they didn't know what they were getting into and coming off of the previous couple seasons where Bob Sutton's defense and those guys didn't click, didn't mesh, were absolutely terrible compared to what they had in the offense. And so a lot of people did question them. And when Frank Clark didn't come out as well as everybody thought he should have, yeah, they were disrespected. He was disrespected. But I think as they went on and things started clicking, people realized, especially after Patrick Mahomes went down and after that Titans game, okay, this defense has clicked. They are one of the best in the National Football League. I think they're still going to earn that as well. So I think from that perspective, maybe they are a little disrespected. But I do think that people gave them a lot more respect come the end of last year when everything was clicking on all cylinders. And they did carry the offense a couple different times later on in the season.
That's the thing about Super Bowl hangover stuff, though, is that, yeah, we can be like, oh, they're motivated. Listen to Matthew. They want to be better. Mahomes is taking notes that he's fourth. I think the way I described it yesterday, and I guess I'm curious if that's how you've seen it in years past, is we've been around sports enough. To me, everyone thinks they're going to avoid it, and that's what makes it so sneaky. And to me, it usually, like, occasionally it'll come with a big thud, and, you know, you'll see guys get comfortable and it'll be that. But I think sometimes it's just like that one less play you didn't take serious enough, and it's this trickle effect, and you don't feel it until it's too late. I described it, Danny, as when I've, you know, like over years gaining weight, right? It's this like, I didn't even realize. And then you're like, oh, I looked at a picture from 5 years ago. Like, oh, I was skinnier. And how did I not realize I was putting on like 2 pounds a year for the last 5 years? And now I'm, you know, 10 to 15 pounds heavier. That's how I feel like it happens to the NFL. And that's how it happens to these teams who have these hangovers. I don't think you realize it until it's too late.
Yeah, I think that's true for the most part. And I think maybe you're looking at that more seriously if they have a regular off season and they're able to celebrate it and they have people around them telling them how good they are and they're getting to, you know, party with their friends or celebrate with their families and everyone is pumping how amazing this team is into their ears and into their heads. But I just, this offseason has been so strange. And a big part of those Super Bowl hangovers, too, is that this team goes further into the postseason and gets beat up and physically, I don't want to say abused, but, like, their bodies go through a lot more than, you know, half of the rest of the league. So when you come into the new season, not only have you been destroying your bodies, but you've also been working really hard in the off season to try to get back to that point. People have been telling you how good you are. So then you go into the next season thinking that maybe you can take a little bit off. But this off season has been so strange because their bodies have had an opportunity to heal. They haven't had OTAs. They haven't had mini camps. They haven't been subjecting themselves to all of the norms of a regular off season. So I think this team also uses this COVID-19 pandemic and not being able to practice as another chip that they can just add to their shoulder because they haven't been able to celebrate the way that they want to. And especially if there are no fans come this season and they don't get to, you know, open the season with the banner drop and the ring ceremony, I think that motivates them just that much more because they didn't get to do what all the other Super Bowl champions in the past have been able to do. So I think when it comes to that Super Bowl hangover for the Chiefs, I think you put an asterisk by this one because the offseason has been so strange And I think it actually will benefit them moving forward.
Chatting with Dani Welniak, sports director over at KCTV 5, our weekly visit with her. And we transition over to Kauffman Stadium. The Royals back in town. They've spent so many days on the road so far to start this season. But unfortunately, they're sitting at 3-9. They're taking on a very good Cubs team. Then they've got a Twins team that's just as hot offensively as they were a season ago coming up. And this point in time, it's not the pitching, it's not the bullpen, it's been the offense, Danny. Last night, just too little too late. When you look at this team offensively right now, do you think is it truly just, hey, they need Dozier back in there, or do you view it as this is a much bigger problem long term for them?
I think Dozier's a big part of it, but I do think that there's more of a long term effect to it. I just that ninth inning rally last night gave me a little bit of hope that they're able to come up and do something in the lineup when the game's on the line or when they need it most. But I think I've talked to you guys about this before, in that over the last couple of years, it's like you have the power in the lineup. You have the Jorge Soler and the Salvador Perez and the Michael Francos who can just crush the ball whenever they want to. But a lot of times they do it when no one's on base. And so they leave a lot of guys stranded. And that is one of the most frustrating things, I think, for both fans and for them as a team, is that for some reason, when those guys, those power guys, get into situations where there are runners on base, they just can't capitalize on it, or something mentally gets in the way. And I just think that is a sign of something that not only have we seen it in the past, but now could potentially be a sign of moving forward. And I don't know how you fix that besides moving guys around and figuring out where they're most comfortable in that lineup.
Well, and I think, you know, obviously we've heard people talk a little bit about that. Even Denny Matthews was on the show on The Drive Monday saying very similar things about that. But the other part, Danny, is me, like, you can keep moving them around, but they don't have, like, a style to their offense. Like, there's no, like, they're not just sluggers who strike out, walk, and hit home runs. They're not all contact hitters. They're not, like, they got a weird variety where it seems like they don't have a theme offensively, or, you know, and I guess in previous years, I've seen that out of Royals players, even if it wasn't the world's most perfect offense, they clearly did things a certain way. All right, we got 5 20 home run hitters who all hit for decent contact and put the ball in play. Like, to me, I don't see that right now. That's my biggest concern about the offense, is I don't feel like they have any kind of style to it.
Yeah, they don't have a style, and they don't really have an identity. I mean, I felt like with the World Series teams, they had the, okay, we're going to get on base, we're going to rely on speed, and that was kind of what defined them. Whereas with these lineups the last couple of years and these guys, you have the guys who want to be the power guys, which, like I mentioned, Soler has shown, but you also have the guys, like you mentioned, that are just willing to get on base and want to get there and want to be able to score. And there's no real true identity to it. And it just doesn't mesh. So Cody, I'm right there with you.
Speaking with Dani Welniak here, KCTV 5. Dani, I was curious. We finally got to see you for the first time, or I got to see you.
Yeah,
I don't know if Gold
speak
did.
For yourself.
I saw Dani for the first time in
Alex.
Months out at opening day on
Since,
Friday.
Like, March, right?
Yes. It's been a very long time. Well, and, you know, obviously we've talked about the fact that Dani is expecting.
Uh-huh.
But that was like, it was like seeing her for the first time. I was like, oh, Dani, that's right. Of course. How could I have forgotten, even though we've been giving parenting advice? We were talking about candy bars earlier, is why I bring this up. And I'm curious what you think an underrated candy bar is. But also, you know, I was also curious if you had developed, because we're talking about popcorn, M&M's, this whole thing. It feels like, you know, pregnancy, what comes synonymous with that is, you know, weird food eating habits. So now I'm trying to get the lowdown on your end.
Okay. First question was any underrated candy bar. I think the Crunch bar and the Hershey bar probably get underrated because it's simple. But with Hershey bars, like, they're so delicious and they make s'mores. Like, I love s'mores so much. So I think the Hershey bar gets a little underrated.
Uh-huh.
As for like pregnancy cravings and stuff, I haven't really had a whole lot of cravings, but I've had aversions, which I think is really strange. Mm. And I know pregnancy hits everyone differently, but like you're not supposed to drink caffeine during a pregnancy, or at least you're supposed to keep it very limited. And I love coffee, but like I could tell that I was pregnant because I started disliking coffee and soda. And so I can't eat or touch or be around that because it just makes me unsettled. And there's just certain things that I used to love that I don't like at all while I'm pregnant. So it's less of the cravings and more of the just like, ugh, I can't believe I liked that.
That's good. Maybe, you know, like you could have had pica or something and then decided to eat like dirt. You don't know.
No.
Gold's looking at me like,
what? That's a real thing.
There's a symptom. Obviously, my wife's had two kids. There's a condition known as pica. Uh-huh. It happens to pregnant women. Danny will confirm this for me, where they experience wanting to eat kind of weird things like lead or dirt or clay or paper. It's bizarre. Wow. Danny, this is real, isn't it?
This is real because my sister actually had to go out and purchase this like edible dirt that you can buy just for pregnant women who have this weird dirt craving.
I had no idea.
It's a real thing.
Aren't you glad you didn't have the desire to eat dirt?
Oh, I thank God every day because that sounds so terrible.
I had no idea they made edible dirt. This is a whole
edible dirt. This is a real thing. Check Amazon.
Oh, my God.
Amazon.
Should we buy
Amazon
some edible dirt everything. And try it, guys?
Sure.
Do you want to try some edible dirt?
Go ahead and get that with the popcorn-flavored M&Ms, Danny, that apparently exists now, too.
I mean, I feel like we at least need to try something. Like, now I'm kind of curious about the edible dirt, Danny. I don't have pica, but it's piqued my interest.
I'm afraid that I might like it. And so, like, if you, like, try something and you're like, oh, it sounds terrible, or... like, I'm trying to think, like the Harry Potter jelly beans, how they have like really weird flavors.
Yep.
And you're like, I actually kind of like the booger flavor. Like, this is, I feel inappropriate for saying stuff like that. So I don't want to be that person who tries dirt and is like, actually.
Not bad.
I should eat this more often.
Rich in minerals or whatever.
Well, before we let you go, Danny, we know we've got to get some parenting advice. Cody's got to hand that out for you as well.
Yes.
All right, so I might already be too late to this because I know you're just a few months out and maybe you've had a baby shower, but don't spend too much on the apparatus in which they would sleep outside of their crib. So like maybe a Mamaroo, which is a brand of that, or like the bouncy seat or the buzzy one or whatever. There's like 1,000 different varieties, and I promise you, you have no idea which version your kid will like. Every kid likes some like the ones that sway side to side. Some like the ones that do all the motion. Some like the ones that are just like cheap and buzz. That was like the most recent kid. All I'm saying is you might want to start cheap and work your way up until you find the one they like. Or buy them used. I don't know. Borrow. Like borrow from a friend who maybe had a kid.
Buying a used seems on that. Something like that. Do you want to be buying that used?
I don't know.
I have no... I'm just saying.
I think... wash up. It's fine.
Okay.
Like, I borrowed for a while. So, like, we had one that Ruby really liked, right? Our older kid, Danny. And then we tried to put the other kid in it, and he's like, this is stupid. I don't like it. So then we, like, bought, like, a cheap buzzy chair off of Amazon, and he didn't like that. And then I borrowed one from my brother that was slightly different than those two, and he really liked it. Like, all I'm saying is you can't possibly predict which version of those chairs they're going to enjoy.
Okay, that's good to know because the Mamaroos are really expensive. They're like $300.
They're crazy. And by the way, do I still have one? I don't have that version. I have like the cheapy version that I got from somebody. So if I still have it, you can have it, Danny. I'm not having any more kids. So
Danny, I hope you are cross-checking this list with, you know, I know Cody has two kids, but just, you know, someone more reliable, perhaps.
Two kids is like practically makes me an expert.
Okay. Danny, appreciate it as always. We'll check in next week.
All right,
there you
guys.
Go. That's Danny Welniak, sports director over at KCTV 5. $300 for a swing?
Oh, they can go upwards more than that.
That's
but people will buy those, and then their kid won't like them, right? Like, what happens is it's this really fancy swing, but kids like to be held different ways, sleep different ways. Like, some kids sleep on their back or their stomach, just like you, right? So you can't be guaranteed any of this.
Over on the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line, 913-576-7610. From the 816, I've played enough football to know what dirt and mud tastes like. It's not as bad as you might think, but clearly not good. Yeah, edible dirt seems like something you wouldn't want your children to have the ability to have either, because then they would just start eating all the dirt, thinking it's all edible.
I probably
want to keep that away from the children.
I just had no idea that was a thing. Here's edible clay, too. I taught you about pica only to learn something myself, that apparently they make edible dirt and clay to try to fulfill that desire.
Unbelievable. All right, coming up in 13 minutes, we get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour, what Andy Reid had to say one-on-one this morning with Fesco in the morning, and predicting Hall of Famers. How many are there on this Chiefs team nationally tried to do that. We'll see if we agree with that. But the NBA has been going on. We know the restart. There are at least, what, 4 or 5 games in for each team, or approaching 4 or 5 games in, I guess, here coming up. Yep. Middle of this month will be the start of the potential play-in games and then the postseason. And the bubble has worked for the NBA. They've been able to keep the test down to nothing since they've really started playing basketball games. No positive tests. Fantastic and all that. But what about next year? We had the NBA's PA director's comments a week ago about they're thinking about using a bubble next year. And it was interesting. I don't think that's feasible in a full 82-game season for the NBA. I think asking players to be in a bubble for 6 months is just ridiculous. So I said maybe you need to shorten the season.
Sure.
Well, Chris Mannix of SI, he was on the Dan Patrick Show. Here's what he had to say about what's being discussed. We'll see if you actually think this would work.
The NBA comes off the 82-game season. I think you could have a 50-60-game season that starts December, even January, because at that point, it doesn't really matter. The question that the league is working through right now is how do you start that season? And some of the GMs that have been on these calls with the league have told me that one of the working ideas right now is to have several bubbles that are set up. It's pretty obvious, Dan, that bubbles are the only thing that works. I mean, the NBA's is working, soccer, hockey, everything else is not working at this point. So the NBA is already kind of in the conception stage of maybe 5 or 6 bubbles that they can put together. You wouldn't stay there for the entire, for the duration. You might stay in the bubble a month and maybe take a week or two off. There's a lot of things to work through there. But right now, the way that the NBA is looking at it is that you might have to have several or more than that bubbles to get these teams in to start the season.
The players might like that better. Instead of 6 months away in a bubble, they get a week off. But the problem with that, is that realistic? Because you're going to have to go through all the intake testing all over again. You're going to have this bubble for, let's say, a month. Things are good. You've got it under control. Oh, by the way, go ahead and take a break for a month. We'll come back. We'll rotate which bubble gets the break. So there's always basketball going on, I think, is how you would have to do this. There's always basketball going on. This bubble
weird.
Gets the week off. But then you're going to have another week delay because you know somebody's going to test positive for COVID when they have a week out of the bubble. They'll probably test positive, and then they're going to be gone for 10 or 14 days. You might have to adjust. And so then you're doing constant intake testing. That seems like an absolute mess for the NBA. If that's the route they were to go, instead of trying to go bubble for the first 2 months of the season. What if you did a bubble the first 2 months of the season and then you had to reevaluate after that?
I think that'd be different, because the problem with doing in and out bubble is it's not a bubble. It's like pseudo bubble. So it's like better than just letting everyone be free, but not as good. The reason why a bubble has worked is because it's been exactly that. Everyone locked in one place, intake testing, people are inside of that area, can't go. And you limit the exposure on the opposite side. If you start opening it up to they can go home for a week, then they can go home for a week, visit the strip club, and
some nice wings.
Yeah, right? I mean, it just doesn't take long
before
somebody breaks that chain. So, like, it's that part of it to me that doesn't work. And I understand, like, and I don't think you're going to talk these players' unions in for doing a bubble for the next 2 years in sports. Like, I mean, they're talking about their entire next season. Why wouldn't they just short it and do 2 month bubble,
month off? You know why. It's because the NBA wants its 82 games. I mean, you know the answer to that. It's 82 games, and they want their TV money.
I understand that, but if they would figure out, like, maybe they need to go to their TV partners or whatever and try to work out a pro rata that doesn't cut out just strictly the number of games, or a lower game threshold that allows them to get where they need to be. But these leagues need to start evaluating a way to get the same amount of or similar TV money and operate with less games, because there are operating costs that come with those things too. Obviously, the reason why they play more games is they make money per game. We know that. But still, a whole second bubble where you, like, let them come in and out and it's 4 or 5 cities, then you're giving a huge advantage to the 5 teams playing in their home city under normal circumstances, essentially. I know they're still in a bubble, but they'll probably let their family in, or at least it'll be a lot easier for their family to get in like it is now, because they don't have to travel anywhere. They can just stay in the same city.
You could have it in non-NBA cities. You could, with arenas, you could say, all right, let's have it in
to
Seattle.
To try to, like, make it even.
Let's have it in Seattle,
Kansas City, Austin.
Uh-huh.
I guess, but at the same, but that's
Vegas.
You know, like, that's silly too. I understand what you're saying. Like, there's a way to, like, even the playing field on that end, but it's just not, like, to me. I actually do appreciate the fact that they're trying to make sure they've got alternate plans just in case. But that one doesn't seem like the good alternate plan for me going forward.
It's because we do know the bubble works, and that's why it's like, okay, we know this is something that works like to have sports. Yes. Where the NFL, the MLB's had its issues so far, NFL's a big unknown, and people have said, can you bubble the NFL? I don't personally think you can do that. I don't think it's necessary to have a season, but it sounds like the NFL's not ruled it out. This is Judy Batista from NFL Network.
He didn't rule anything out. He said everything is on the table. They've been very clear that they expect their procedures to evolve and change during the course of the season. But he did also emphasize the football season is 6 months long. He said that is longer than we have been dealing with this pandemic. In the United States, 6 months is a long time, sort of suggesting the idea of putting an entire football season, an entire league in a bubble for 6 months is just not tenable.
She was referencing her conversation with Commissioner Roger Goodell. And so it sounds like they...
But you could take everybody out. 14-game season, four cities, and you get a two-week, just like you just started with the NBA, you get a 2-3 week shot out of the bubble to break up the 6 months. You play for 2 months. You're gone for 3 weeks. That's your bye plus two.
That seems like an absolute mess too, though. Because again, same with the NBA deal. If you let them leave for 2 weeks, if you're that team, let's say you're...
But you leave for 2 weeks and then you got a full week of intake before another week. Like, that's just a practice week.
But then there's still a chance of a missed game, because even if you have a full week of intake test and someone tests positive, then they're gone for 14 days, though, potentially. And so you're missing.
It's...
And how are you determining the schedule? I don't think a bubble for the NFL is feasible, and I don't think they're going to really... And based on those comments there, I don't see them really truly exploring. They haven't ruled it out, but I don't see them truly exploring that route. I feel like we've seen even baseball, who's had the outbreaks, and they pushed forward, and they had postponements of games, and they didn't stop. I don't think the NFL is planning on that impacting them directly either. All right, coming up in 90 seconds, Sirt has got his fantasy flash heading to Chicago, taking a look at their wide receiver, Anthony Miller. What value does he have? Where should he be drafting him? Plus, we get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. What did Andy Reid say this morning on Fesco in the Morning, in particular about the running backs?
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio. Chiefs Red Half Hour, every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold.
All right, let's get to some Chiefs here for the next half hour. 1 hour from now, though, our Royals insider, Josh Ferner, going to join us. Royals and Cubs back at Kauffman Stadium tonight. We'll get his perspective. Three starts in for Brady Singer. Offensive struggles continue. We'll talk to Vern at 12:30. But Andy Reid was on one-on-one this morning here on 610 with Fesco in the Morning. Plenty to discuss with him. In particular, I think what's interesting is anytime you get comparisons, and whether it's in terms of directability,
they know what they're doing,
or what, you know, we know the comparison for Clyde right around draft time was Brian Westbrook. We heard that immediately. Remember, and Brian Westbrook was like, wait a second. He's like, wait a second. Because remember, there was the comment about his, he might already be better than what Brian Westbrook was coming out of college and things like that. And Westbrook had those comments in Philly and everything. But there was another comparison that was given this morning from Andy Reid, in particular about Clyde, but his maturity. And who do you think he compared it to? And this one might surprise you. And, well, it hits very close to Arrowhead and on the coaching staff.
He reminds me of Eric Bieniemy when Eric was young. And I had him in Philadelphia towards the end of his career there. And but I had competed against him. We all did. We all saw that from Missouri and Kansas when he played at Colorado. But he's wired that same way, where he's mature for his age. He's smart. He's tough. And he shows that. I mean, the veteran players see it, and then he's got skills. So those guys normally, barring injury, they normally work out for you. Okay. Now, he's lucky he's got other guys that can also play in that room and create competition, and he'll have to stay on top of his game. That's a demanding position in the best league there is in the world. So he'll have to adjust to that, but he sure is wired right to do that. And then we'll just see. He's got to go through this whole process, which is new for him. And we throw a lot at that position. And so he'll have to digest all of that and be able to recall it in a second and get himself out there and then play.
I think that's also that comment there from Reid, and then knowing what Clyde said 10, 14 days ago about the playbook being easy, about his willingness to be a pass protector, that makes even more sense now after hearing the way Andy Reid talks just about his maturity and just his knowledge of the game and like where he's at and how they expect him to be able to handle this situation.
And I guess that's the good news, is that Andy has gone out of his way to praise Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He hasn't been constantly going out of his way to praise Willie Gay. He didn't constantly go out of his way to praise Breland speaks. Look at whoever they've taken in the last first couple of rounds over the last few years. The last guy that they gushed over Mahomes from day one. So that's different. And even this talk about Clyde Edwards-Helaire is nowhere close to that. But if you're just looking for further evidence that he's going to use Clyde Edwards-Helaire right away, this is it. And I think that's the best possible news for Kansas City, because I think the best version of their offense is him good and ready to go. But like, maturity is a hard thing, because you can be a mature player and still not know what you're doing. A willingness to learn, a willingness to fix the mistakes you make, that'll help him. But with that early part of the schedule, how much are they going to let you live and die by mistakes you make on the field, given the importance of some of those really early season games for the Chiefs this year?
He is the only reason why I slightly am upset that there's not at least one preseason game. He's it. Like,
because you want to just get a taste.
There's nobody else I want to see. We know what Mahomes is. He's going to be fun every single game to watch. But to see Clyde Edwards-Helaire for the first time in a preseason game, and you want to talk about where the hype is for him right now. If we were able to see one preseason game and where he looked good in that game, the odds already changed for his rookie of the year stuff. They would change again, because I think he would impress in a preseason game. And then we think about the excitement already we would have. So it's a true unknown in terms of how they're going to utilize him touch wise week one against the Texans. It makes that game even more exciting. It's already the home opener. It's going to be the first football game we've had in months and months. And even if it's going to look different and everything like that, but you add in now Clyde to the mix and wondering truly for the first, we're not going to know. There's barely anybody that's going to be even allowed at practice, and it's just practice anyway for Clyde. So it's going to be maybe even for Andy Reid and the coaching staff to see him for the first time in real live action against somebody other than his own team. And right now they're still, what, the 14th? They haven't even had it against his own team. Right now they're just doing, padded t-shirts kind of thing that Andy was talking about. In fact, here's what Andy Reid had to say about getting work, and specifically the rookies getting work on the field. This was this morning on Fesco.
They have a thing where they can wear padded shirts, which is new. That's a new thing with the new CBA.
Okay.
So, but they can have their helmets on with the padded shirts, and then the next step would be shells, and then pads, And so the rookies were able to do the padded shirt part and got them their work in for just about an hour, and short, sweet, but we don't have a lot of numbers. So they were moving around pretty quick, and then they can filter back in with the veterans and do a little bit of lifting for them. The veterans go for a couple hours of lifting, and then the rookies will get a quick jump on that, and then they can do all the meetings with the veterans also. So it's a good setup for them. It's a nice little elementary step for them before they merge here with the veteran players on the field with helmets on.
Yeah, Pat, who was that? Something the players requested then? The padded shirt deal?
Apparently, it was a part of the new collectively bargained agreement. To me, it just feels like it's like they're just adding layers before you put on real pads.
Just to delay them.
All right, we're in shorts and t-shirts. Now we're in padded shirts. Then will they be in what? What's shells, right?
Yep.
And then what they? I've watched a lot of training camp practice in my life. Shells, then eventually full padded practice. That to me is the idea. It's just like it's a mild protection in between those stages where, fine, we'll let you like make a little physical contact, but we're not trying to out here get tackled. If Clyde Edwards-Helaire, though, is making any kind of an impact as far as like what Andy thinks of him in this kind of environment, that means Helaire's taking it really seriously. That's the good news. He's taking his offseason really seriously. And while that's an easy thing to be like, well, yeah, don't they all? No. So it turns out there are a lot of NFL players in a regular offseason who do not take it seriously enough, do not show up prepared, and do not take team meetings as serious as you would like. That doesn't mean sometimes they don't overcome, right? They said Antonio Brown used to be trouble sometimes in team meetings or would show up late occasionally. Turns out he was still a phenomenal player on the field when he played. But, as a young player in particular, trying to get into Andy Reid's offense immediately, you better take stuff real serious if you want any chance of getting on the field, which I think he has.
So it all really ramps up coming up on the 14th here of August. And we'll see as time goes on, specifically just how that's all going to look. It'll be a lot trickier this year. Training camp different for everybody. And that includes the media, just in terms of how much you're actually going to be able to see. A lot of it's going to be hopefully stuff pushed out video-wise, even from the Chief. So Clyde Edwards-Helaire continuing to feel better and better about the situation involving him and how much confidence the Chiefs have as well. So Bill Barnwell, we've had him on the show before, and he always has interesting pieces that he puts out. And the latest was about future Hall of Famers, and he tried to predict them for every single team in the National Football League. And he separated it into different categories, like who he says are locks, likely in the running, work to do. And then there's guys just left off the list, of course, entirely. Four Chiefs were in at least one of the categories. Mahomes, Hill, Kelsey, and Tyrann Mathieu, for example. This is going to stun you, but the lock at 100% he put was Patrick Mahomes. Likely, 70 to 99% chance it was Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelsey. And then work to do, and the 10% chance to 39% chance was Tyrann Mathieu. And I think that makes plenty of sense, man. Tyrann does have the most work to do out of the Chiefs bunch if you're talking about Hall of Fame. He's getting there, but he's got to win another ring or two and continue. And he's still, he's not 30 years yet. So 30 years old yet. So he's got some room left for sure. He's got to win another ring or two. And I think play the way he did last year for two or three of those years for you to be really realistically thinking Hall of Fame. Because Hall of Fame for Tyrann Mathieu, because I haven't even thought about Hall of Fame for him. I think he needs a couple more rings, and he has to play at this level for another two or three years for that to become a legitimate conversation. So I agree where they have him placed. He's in position to where he could get there, but he's got a lot. He does have a lot of work to do still. Hall of Fame is prestigious for a reason. It's not easy to get. There's a lot of great players that are not Hall of Famers.
Correct. And this is where he's 1,000% right on Mahomes. He's a lock. I think I'd put Kelsey in the lock category until I read his article and he correctly points out that only 9 tight ends in NFL history are even in the Hall of Fame. And I was like, God, is that it? And the Chiefs are what? Going to have 2 of them?
Well, the tight end position changed with Gonzalez. 10? I think we'll see more over the next 40 years.
Absolutely, we will. Because Gronkowski is an eventual Hall of Famer. And Travis Kelce is an eventual Hall of Famer. But it's still not a lot. I'll remind you that tight ends, they're a lot like running backs sometimes, where their shelf life in this league doesn't last very long. Look at Jimmy Graham, for instance. Remember when Jimmy Graham would just run this league as a receiving tight end? He was one of the best tight ends in the NFL for what? I mean, from a fantasy perspective, sort of what, 2-3 years? You play him like a wide receiver, he had against 1,500 yards.
I think it was 3 seasons.
Yeah, and then what? Now he's a shell? Like, you got to do it. Now, Travis Kelce already has the most consecutive 1,000-yard seasons by a tight end ever at 4. Presumably going to get 5 this year, barring injury. Like, all you got to do as a tight end to put together 8 dominant years, and Kelsey's already halfway there.
Well, that's why he's in the, like, 70 to 90. I don't know if you could say lock yet, but knowing that he's going to get 1 or 2 more years at minimum with Patrick Mahomes is going to eventually put him in the lock category. Right now, putting him in likely, I think that's a fair assessment. Same with Tyreek Hill. The assumption is these guys are going to...
That's way too high for him, in my opinion.
These guys are going... You think it's too high for Tyreek right now? I think...
Yes.
I think he's in a 70... So you think there's less than a 70% chance that Tyreek gets in? Again, he's not saying, like, today would he get in over
Absolutely.
His career.
Do you know how hard it is to get in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah,
as
but
a
you're thinking about
wide receiver?
Tyreek Hill, though.
Calvin
for
Johnson
the next
might have to wait to get in the Hall of Fame.
Tyreek Hill, for the majority of his career, is going to play in his prime, by the way, with prime Patrick Mahomes. That's what you're banking on. At least I'm banking on there.
Oh, I'm not denying
so he's
that.
He's going to get the rings.
4,000 yards is all.
But we're talking about if
he
you think Mahomes
1,000 yard season. I mean, what are we
talking
about? We're saying he's
about rings as well.
70 to 90% 2,000 yard.
He might end up with 3+ rings, just like Mahomes, and have numbers to go with it. How many wide receivers put up numbers and also had 3 rings to go with it? Not many.
Yeah, but I mean, Tyreek Hill's only under contract through, I think, 2 more years. Like, there's no guarantee that he's going to play his entire career with Patrick Mahomes.
So 2 more rings, okay.
But that's also why it's much more difficult for wide receivers, because wide receivers generally don't stay with the same team forever. They bounce around the league. But, like, Randy Moss is one of the greatest wide receivers I've ever seen. He played for multiple teams, but he was great everywhere he went, basically, except for Oakland. That one year was just a disaster. But I think Tyreek Hill's a really, really talented player, but it's really difficult to make the Hall of Fame as a wide receiver. Like, he's nowhere near yet, even with the Super Bowl ring, the guys of this era who should be Hall of Famers.
Yeah, I mean, like, A.J. Green has 2 years put together where he's got 1,200 yards and then 1,500 yards and 19 touchdowns
and
over 2 years.
And no rings. He's never probably going to get one.
No, probably not at this rate. Not unless he gets the hell out of it.
Joins the Chiefs.
Rings matter, but when we're talking about skill position players, rings don't come into play as much as longevity do. Like, Eli is not a Hall of Famer in my mind, but he's going to make the Hall of Fame because he has the rings. I don't think you can say the same thing for wide receivers.
No, like, Adrian Peterson doesn't have a ring, and he is going to be in the Hall of Fame so fast.
Yeah, but there's different ways of getting in. You're right.
No,
some people have the great stats and no rings. Some people have three rings and above average and maybe even pretty great stats, not Hall of Fame worthy stats. But you're like, well, he's
on a 15-year career in three rings.
Yeah,
is what you're saying.
I think there's like a combination. Is he there yet? Of course not. No.
No, that's why I think I'm not saying he wouldn't be on the list. I would just put him in the running category.
Okay. So you
think
he's
young, but like there's no mention. Like he's just as in the running as Chris Jones. Like at Tyreek Hill, this is now last year.
See, I disagree. I think it's tougher on the defensive end.
Okay, is Tyreek Hill the number one wide receiver in the NFL?
He's top five.
Okay, what's Chris
Jones'
position?
Top two or three?
Yeah, so that's, I mean, why wouldn't Chris Jones?
Top five, top
interior
three.
Defensive lineman is what hurts him. Yeah, not the fact that he's dominant in his position. Frank Clark, I mean, I'm getting told he's a top 10 defensive end in football.
Yeah,
now you got to be a top three defensive end in football to do that.
Yeah.
And then what about Mitchell Schwartz?
Yeah, here's the thing with Mitchell Schwartz. Unfortunately for him,
can't get in the Pro Bowl. Probably not getting in the Hall of Fame.
I think we've all expressed how we feel about Mitchell Schwartz and his performance and how undervalued he is. But if he can't get on NFL top 100s, he can't get the Pro Bowls. He clearly doesn't have respect from his peers then across the league. He doesn't have respect nationally from writers when they do all their lists. And by the way, again, writers ultimately vote on the Pro Bowl. And
didn't get in the top 100,
on the Hall of Fame, excuse me. So like. No, I would be foolish to tell you that he's going to the Hall of Fame, Cody. I'd be an absolute fool to do that because he's not getting on anything else. It's wrong, but no, I would say there's 0% chance of that happening. I mean, it's just not, it's tough enough. Talking about positions being tough to get in.
I don't want to say zero. Can't he just be in that, work to do, that 10%er? Can he be a 10%er?
It's just, to be an offensive lineman and make the Hall of Fame, you have to be the best left tackle in football for a decade.
Waters got in at guard.
Like Will Shields was the best guard in football forever and made like 50 Pro Bowls back when they mattered.
Made
and
all
it
pros
still took
all
him
decades.
Like three times to get in.
I mean, I think I would at least put them in the.
It stinks for him. It's just, man, when you can't even get on any of these, why would I? The Hall of Fame's the peak, and he can't. His peers aren't even thinking he's a top 100 player.
There's no one else we consider in this list, right?
No.
Not unless you just want to like take a shot in the dark and you're convinced Clyde Edwards-Helaire is the dude.
Yeah, but he's a running back.
No, it's so hard to get into a running back anyway because it's just hard to be good that long. Hey, at least it's, you know, it's better than being on the not having anyone on the list at all. The Dolphins had no one on the list. The Patriots only had in the running guys and Stephon Gilmore and Cam Newton.
In the division, did you see in the division who has them? So the Broncos, their lock is Von Miller. Okay, no doubt. Work to do, Melvin Gordon and Jarrell Casey.
Melvin Gordon?
Have you ever heard of Melvin Gordon being good enough to be a Hall of Famer? He shouldn't be on the list. He's hurt too much.
No, he's got like 1,000-yard season.
Jarrell Casey is the real Chris Jones argument in this. Yeah. If Jarrell Casey can be on that list, why the hell can't Chris Jones?
That's a fair point. You would say longevity at that. Maybe Casey
sure,
gets a little bit of that.
You've now watched him do
that's
it
probably
long
why
enough to actually do it.
But no, like, if Jarrell Casey or Melvin Gordon end up in the Hall of Fame, then something went wrong.
The Raiders' only guy is Witten. Jason Witten.
And he's not even really, he's not theirs.
That's
not
a young team. It for all the teams, you got to just throw some names out there.
Yeah, they didn't even try with the Dolphins. They're like, none of these dudes.
Shockingly, Tampa Bay has one lock, and that's Tom Brady. Yeah. Duh. Gronk, 70-99. They didn't even put Gronk as a lock, by the way, which makes no sense.
And the Chargers had a few in the running, so 40-69% likely he had Joey Bosa and Derwin James. And work to do, he had Keenan Allen, Trey Turner, Melvin Ingram, and Chris Harris Jr. But that's the thing. If Melvin Ingram can be in the work to do category, couldn't Frank Clark? Like, aren't they both, like, top 10 pass rushers but not top 3 pass rushers?
I mean, they're both closer to Tom Bahali than they are to Derek Thomas or something like that.
Which I agree. I think both those guys are like that. Career pass rushers who put up good stats. The reason why Frank Clark has a better chance than Melvin Ingram is because the same reason you just said. Frank Clark's got a chance to stack up 3 rings and put together 100 career sacks. Yeah, I mean, that's a massive advantage.
No doubt. If you're going to weigh someone that has very similar stats, of course, then you're going to say, that guy had 3 rings, that guy had none, or that guy had one.
Someone's going to get dinged, though, eventually. They're going to be like, I mean, yeah, he's got 3 rings, but I played with Mahomes. You know, what's he supposed to do? Like, that's all, because people talk about that with Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson should absolutely 1,000% be a Hall of Famer. But, you know, Calvin Johnson, they're going to be like, I mean, look what he put up, and he had, like, Dan Orlovsky throwing to him. You know, whoever. Just dudes, man. Just guys running out of the back of the end zone and then attempting passes thrown to him. That was his game for a while. I like Orlovsky. He's a really good commentator. He makes fun of that moment as well.
It would have been interesting if he would have been able to get, and we know that it looks like, and Lewis Riddick and Brian Greese, he's part of their group, but I know Dan Orlovsky, based on some of his tweets, he was a little upset that he wasn't part of that. No, I was thinking about the Lions. Of course, they've had some Hall of Famers as well, but like two of them, we're talking about, you know, Barry Sanders and then Calvin Johnson. Both of them are going to be guys that had short NFL careers, and two of your Hall of Famers are guys that only played.
Yeah, but they were both clearly the best players at their position at that time for almost the entire time they were in the league. It's the same reason Antonio Brown should eventually make the Hall of Fame. He is crazy, kind of. Like, he clearly has some mental problems and is running the end of his career right into the ground. But if you go back through Antonio Brown's stretch, he had a stretch of games incredible, where he just went for like 1,510 touchdowns, like 6 consecutive years. That's incredible.
Remember, T.O., though, he had a lot of the writers weren't voting him in because he didn't have, like, true serious, I would say, off-the-field stuff like Brown has had.
But stupid, too.
It was, and that's why, remember, T.O. did not give his speech at Canton. He did it at, like, a high school
or
college.
And also, T.O. never had a 5-year dominant stretch like I saw out of Antonio Brown. So that even tells you another thing.
Last minute. UFC head Dana White says Fight Island is definitely happening again this year. Says it's so popular with fighters, Abu Dhabi will soon be the fight capital of the world. He told TMZ that he's already working on the process of booking flights and fights for UFC's return to the island in September and October.
Hey, there is...
Why didn't they fight outside?
So that was disappointing. The marketing for that, they had the ring set up outside on the beach, and it was gorgeous. You're like, this is awesome. Well, they just had it inside an arena, and that was it. There's plenty of money, as we know, in Abu Dhabi. That's why they're going. Let's be real. Fighters love it. Dana White loves it because
it's
there's
the
a lot of
the
cash.
WWE goes to Saudi Arabia. Yeah,
there is plenty of oil money and cash going on there.
It's not a different experience for anyone except for the fighters.
Yeah, that's why they got to put it outside. Yeah, like, at least
they're not going to
see some wind blow in the trees or something.
That was the biggest disappointment with it. It was inside an arena.
Other than that, it's just like I'm watching a fight, but they're there. Like, correct. I don't care where a boxing match takes place. If it's a big boxing match, I'll watch it. But it's not like, one's in Tennessee. Like, I don't care.
Okay. I agree with you.
The two biggest name fighters? Cool.
I agree with
experience
you.
Experience doesn't change for me. Only changes for the people who are there.
Right now, it does. What you said about boxing, I would disagree with in normal times. Like, if it's a fight in Vegas or at MSG, has a different feel on TV even than a fight that's in Jacksonville, Florida. It does. Trust me, with crowd, it absolutely does, even on TV.
I haven't watched a lot of fights from Jacksonville, Florida, but sure.
But right now, you're right. Right now, they could have it at you know, Hy-Vee Arena, Cody, and have UFC set up, and it wouldn't matter for you on the TV product at home.
Sure.
It wouldn't mean a thing at all, but I'm trying to get you to watch a little more at UFC. I haven't watched the last month. Probably been about a month.
If you're not going
to
watch, why am I?
Yeah, well, I watched the first couple of Fight Islands, but now there's other sports for me to watch. Now I got baseball back in the mix. I was watching the MLS. We got the NBA restart back, so.
Yeah, that's going to be a hard pull for me on a Saturday night, considering the available options. Like, even tonight, I get to watch Chris Bubich. Like, there was a UFC fight tonight. Am I clicking over? No, I'm good. Like, I got other things to watch. And then eventually, I'm going to have Patrick Mahomes play football again, so.
I can't wait for that day. Can't wait. Thursday, September 10th. Let's hope everything works and we get that game against the Texans and everything else works out just fine. All right, we head into the noon hour. Josh Fernier, our Royals insider, going to join us at 12:30. We'll get his thoughts where we're at with three starts into the Brady Singer career in Kansas City. What has to change for this offense? And we get to what's trending next.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.